What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Joining me here at the roundtable are students from Florida High, FSU's Developmental Research School. I welcome Andrew Rackshaw. He is in the 11th grade, and he is in the SGA and BSA, and what's SC?
XC, cross country.
Cross country. Okay. Glad to have you.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Chelsea Heimer. Chelsea is also in the 11th grade, sports, SGA, and ocean.
Hi. I'm excited.
Glad to have you. Joshua Weinstein, 11th, acting, Model UN Engineering.
Yes, thank you. I'm pleased to be here today.
And
thank
I'm
you.
Looking forward to talking with you.
As am I.
Emoria Ling, she's into writing, SGA, and reading. Those are her things.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Violence permeates our very existence. The United States was conceived and nurtured by violence. Not only do Americans engage in violence, they are entertained by it. Violent films, euphemized as action flicks, dominate our television sets and movie theaters. Killing video games entertain our children. Baseball, once America's national game, has taken a back seat to football, which is so violent it destroys the brains of those who play it. So, when you think about violence, it's so deeply rooted in our culture. What role do you think power and control play in the basis of much of the violence that we see? And whomever.
Power and control.
You know, when we look at just violence overall, do you feel, and you might want to think about it and I'll come back, but do you think that power and control have any role in the violence that we are seeing that permeates our existence?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Most violence is actually caused from a struggle and power shift mm-hmm. or someone trying to gain power. Mm-hmm. It just, they go together hand in hand.
Okay. Other comments?
I feel like maybe people who feel that they don't have enough control or power in their lives, maybe they don't feel like they have enough opportunity, can their frustration can make them become violent sometimes.
Okay.
I think that today we have a bunch of people who want to, like, become leaders, and I think people confuse power and control with, like, actually being, like, a good leader.
Okay.
And so sometimes leadership can be mixed up.
Well, where do you sit on this?
Well, I have to agree with everyone. I do think power and control does come with violence. Like Andrew said, a lot of people feel as if in their lives they don't have control or they can't control things that do happen to them. So they convert to violence because they can, you know, I won't say attack because violence comes in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
But usually they can attack someone that they feel is weaker than them or might not be, you know, like they can't, other people can't control what they do to them. So, you know, they might feel like they can do that to other people. So it's just, you know.
Do you feel, when you think about violence, and I'm thinking about violence across the board now, okay, do you feel like the American culture fuels or feeds into this violence that we are seeing and at all levels, okay, not just the mass murders or mass shootings or the violence that we're seeing in the urban areas, in the inner city, but I'm just talking about violence overall.
I believe they do. I believe that for a lot of people, violence can be somewhat exciting because it can be something that they wouldn't do on a regular norm. But if it comes in different forms, it can be like, you know, it can be enticing to others.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes.
Okay. What about the rest of you? I can't believe this. You all are really thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, oh, I didn't think she was going to ask that question. That's a look on your face. But again, what I want you to do is get into the mindset as much as you possibly can of the violence that we are experiencing in our culture. Okay. Now, I know it's worldwide, you know, there are wars and we see all kinds of violence. But now we're just going to kind of focus in on the type of violence that we are seeing here in America. So, again, we're talking about the culture and how the culture, how our culture fuels this violence, how it feeds it.
So I feel like maybe America, being an American, I guess, people feel like as an American, we, like in war and stuff, we get involved in foreign problems because we feel like we need to stand up for, like, the ideals we believe in, like liberty and freedom. But I feel like maybe there's not enough emphasis in our culture on trying to solve problems diplomatically.
Okay. All right.
Just talking things out.
Chelsea, what do you sit on this?
I definitely think it affects our culture. And earlier you brought up movies. And I know myself, I like to watch action movies. And I've never really thought of it in that way. But I feel like, you know, sometimes the movies you watch will affect you in your judgment. And so I definitely...
And that's a good point. I'm glad you shared that. That's an excellent point. Because even if you go back, we're talking about our culture. Even if you go back to the old cartoons, they were all violent. Somebody, you know, was beating somebody else on the head, and then they were dying, but then in the next set, they were alive. I mean, but... Again, it's that violent. Yeah, you had some.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in movies, a lot of the time, I feel like there's so much of an emphasis on, like, the person fighting for what's right and someone who's, like, the bad guy, like, good guy versus bad guy idea. When in reality, I feel like it's a lot more complicated. Like, there's reasons for why people are the way they are, like frustration, anger, fear, and all those things. I feel like maybe if people did a better job at working with people that have those kind of problems, then there wouldn't be as much violence in the United States or anywhere, really.
Okay. All right.
So. Violence has always been in American culture. I mean, the United States started as a revolution. We started out rebelling and fighting in war. And every day there is violence going on, even in close families. I know that some kids grow up with their parents constantly fighting and arguing, and it's just this terrible atmosphere, but they get used to it. And now it's kind of just a social norm.
All the things you've said, I'm just nodding my head because you've brought up some very good points. I guess my question would be, you know, often we hear lawmakers, legislators talking about let's make this law and let's make that law. Do you think that we can legislate away violence?
I don't think so.
Okay. Why? Elaborate.
I feel like violence is usually something that happens, like, in the moment. It's something that, like, you can't control people's thoughts and emotions through laws. I mean, I feel like there's ways that you can, mitigate the problems from becoming, like, even bigger problems. Like, if someone's angry and they find a way to get a gun, it could be a much bigger problem than if they're just angry and there's, like a spat.
Well, you know, and another thing that has changed, at least I've observed, is that the way we handle our stress, our anger, has changed. I mean, when I was in school, sure, people had disagreements, there was discord, but it didn't resort with a gun. You know, I mean, it may have been some words and maybe even, you know, a fist fight, so to speak, but not guns. And now we're at a point where you step on my shoes, I might blow you away. And you know I'm not being facetious either. Okay? We're at that point. And so I guess my question goes back to why is this violence that we're seeing so prevalent in the United States? Because the United States statistics on violence are off the charts when compared to comparable, you know, nations. I mean, just really, that's totally, you know, askew, all right? So what is it? Why is violence so prevalent here? Why are we seeing it?
I think that violence is very prevalent because a lot of people, you know, usually when you get upset, would you rather just lash out or would you actually rather okay, let me think about what I'm saying. Let me actually analyze myself. You know, mm-hmm. it takes more work to actually, you know, really think about what you're going to do. So when you're in the situation and someone just does something, you know, it's kind of easier just to act in the moment very quickly. And I think that's what America has done. And I also believe that there's not a lot of people that are teaching the entire nation that, you know, you should probably think, you know what I'm saying, think about before you do something. And if you look at our leaders, a lot of our leaders, they're no longer doing, you know, they're no longer thinking before they do action. So when our leaders are doing, I think the people are kind of like, you know, well, maybe I should just resort to, you know, maybe I should resort to violence. Maybe I shouldn't just really care. Maybe I should just kind of like do what I want to do. I think that's a big issue as well.
Yeah. Okay. This is like a lack of examples, like someone who represents things that you can actually believe in, someone that could represent you and you'd be proud of.
Mm-hmm. And you, so what I kind of hear you saying, and you can direct me if I'm wrong, is a lack of role models is what you're saying.
Yes.
Are the role models that are there are ones who model inappropriate behavior, inappropriate ways for handling your frustration. Chelsea, you're smiling. Comments.
I said like the Kardashians. Maybe we should be thinking about, it was just Martin Luther King Day on Monday, so maybe we should be thinking about Martin Luther King more than, like, Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, but then that gets right back to what we were talking about earlier, which is the culture, okay? And that culture is what dictates, you know, our attitude toward violence, much of how we handle violence, how we address it. So how do we change a culture? Can a culture be changed? Because if that is our mindset, if that is the way that we as a people handle discord, disagreement, whatever it may be, that's just kind of something that's ingrained in the culture. How do we change that? What do we do to address that?
I think we could change it in our culture by just going back to the role models. We need people that are going to be able to actually step up and show other people what you should do, what's right. Mm-hmm. I think it won't happen overnight. Most definitely won't. But I do believe over time it can become better. It's just other people. A lot of people are like, should I step up to the plate? You know, actually coming out and being brave and actually, you know, trying to work on something that's a huge issue for like hundreds of years. That's a huge task to deal with. And it's kind of hard for some people to step up, you know, actually be that type of person. But I think if more people step up and show what it's like to be a person that thinks about their actions, a kind mm-hmm. person, I think a culture can definitely be changed. And if more of our leaders actually lead the people in, you know, in a correct form, then I think it could possibly be changed.
Okay, well, hold your thoughts. You tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour we are talking about violence in America. I have students from Florida High. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are looking at violence in America. To this point, we've looked at culture and the role that culture may play, and Imaria had mentioned that role models might be an issue. I wanted to explore that a little bit more, because who are our role models? How do we identify the role models? That's something to think about. And what significance is it of role models to you? I didn't hear from the rest of you. What do you think?
Right now, I'm thinking about the children because mm-hmm. their role models are their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, people are getting married at such young ages and it doesn't last. And the kid sees this and that's their role model.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have strong relations with their father in many communities in mm-hmm. our country. And due to this lack, they resort to violence because they can't express themselves. Mm-hmm. And no one taught them another way. This is probably why we have so much violence, because no one knows how to deal with it.
Well, you know, we would be remiss as we talk about this culture and role models. I mean, and we're talking about violence in America. We certainly have to explore the violence that we see in these big cities. Do you feel like there is an epidemic of violence in the United States? Before we get into that, do you think that there's an epidemic going on? Because it seems like violence is everywhere.
I do think it's an epidemic because there hasn't been change. You know, there has. If you look over the past years from the United States, not much has changed. But concerning violence, not really. It's really has been just put under the rug. It hasn't been addressed. Mm-hmm. And like he said, people grow up. They see people that they think are their role models, and that's what happens. They grow up in the world, and they don't know what to look forward to. So when they see something, they're like, oh, that's kind of where I grew up. That's something I recognize. That's mm-hmm. that's what gets, you know, that's what becomes their leader. That's what becomes, you know.
What role do you think that the socioeconomic status plays? I mean, if you go into a community and 33% of the people in the community are unemployed, okay? 50% of the community live below the poverty level, okay? Education levels are poor, okay? What role does that play, in your opinion, in violence, okay?
It plays a huge role. Because the families that have the lower income, they typically don't last because there's not enough money to sustain. Many kids get shipped off to orphanages. And the education, if you don't get the right help or you don't get the right teachers, if your parents aren't the role models, the teachers usually are.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to a poor school, you lock the role model there as well. Mm-hmm. And they're not able to teach you how to deal with your violence. Because violence is kind of natural. It's kind of inherent in you. Because
mm-hmm.
it's our code to want to defend ourselves if something happens.
And if you live in a community, if you're in a milieu that responds and deals with violence on a daily basis, you know, there are some communities where, you know, kids are dodging bullets, literally.
We've heard about it. Sure.
So if you are in a community where that is happening all the time, what impact is that going to have on your daily existence, on how you handle things, on how you view things, on what you value?
It starts to become your normal. You're so used to it, that's just what you resort to.
Okay.
And then you pass it down to your children. And it's just this endless cycle of seeing monkey see, monkey do.
If people feel like they're in like danger, or if people they care about are in danger, then they'd be more likely to adopt like violence to protect the people they care about.
And that, I'm going to write that. That's a good point, because I'll come back to you, but I want to hear what you all have to say, and then we'll come back to your point.
Okay.
Imori.
Okay, refresh the question for one more time.
Well, I think it's evolved into still looking at the demographics of a community.
Okay.
And when looking at those demographics of the community, what impact do they have on just the everyday functioning of those individuals who live in that community?
Okay, for those individuals that live in that community, I feel like you said, a lot of people that are uneducated or have low incomes or really no incomes, I think that just goes down to lack of resources. When you have a lack of resources and everyone around you has the lack of resources, like you said, you're gonna resort to violence, or you're gonna resort to things that you see around you. Not to have to agree with them, because that's really true, because usually, you know, it's only so long you can keep up something when everything around you is just like, oh, everything's the same. It's like, you know, what's going to give? And, you know, if you keep trying and trying, everyone around you is just doing what they want to do. It's just, you know.
Or doing not even so much what they want to do,
or
but maybe
they
what they have to do
yes.
to survive.
That's
you know,
true.
And that puts a different twist on it. Because as you say, you're doing what they want to do, it's like, hey, this is what they want to do. All they want to do is be violent. So you put a negative twist on it. Maybe, you know, that young man joined that gang because he had to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's true.
I mean,
yeah.
And that gang takes the role of the family.
Right.
Okay? So it wasn't so much that's what he wanted to do, that's what he or she had to do if they wanted to survive. And so those are the kinds of things that I say we think we have to really consider. When we make statements, we've got to think about all the different variables that play into this community, this world, wherever, whatever it is we may be talking about. Chelsea, I haven't heard from you. Where do you sit on this?
I agree with everything they said here. But, like, as myself, I just wish that, like, it wouldn't have to come to this. And I think everyone pretty much wishes that there wasn't any violence, but I don't think that violence can't exist. I think it has to be there in some form.
Is that a very realistic wish? I mean, when you think about the United States, Europeans colonized America, okay? And those that colonized America were neither enlightened or tolerant, to be very honest about it. You know, they came here, and I guess they were thinking that this was going to be a new country that they were going to, you know, develop. And then they get here, and they're Indians here. And what did we do to them? Okay, I mean, really, come on. I mean, we're talking about violence and how it builds. It started on violence. I mean, you know, the Europeans despised each other. The Puritans despised the Quakers, and the Quakers despised the Catholics. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look way back at the very beginning. You know, there's always been some type of, you know, caste system, you know, categorizing one, against, pitting one against another. So is it realistic to even think that we would be without some form of violence in our community?
I feel like it comes back to what you're talking about, like how it has to be a change in your mind. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't accept that there's going to be differences between you and other people, then that closed-mindedness causes conflict. If everybody was the same, what would there be, like, it's actually interesting in the world?
Yeah. I mean, and today, we glorify violence. I mean, when you look at the videos, or maybe it's just me, but many of the videos are kind of gangster videos. You know? I mean, and who do you like but the gangster guy, you know, that's, you know, demeaning, you know, women, okay? You know, flashing guns and violence in the videos, but those are the videos that people love. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, am I wrong? You all tell me.
Yeah, some people.
I also think that the news plays like a big part in this discussion, because the news, all they report besides like a couple good things is like violence and arguments. And I mean, they'll have an interview with political leaders and they'll just sit there and argue the whole time.
Right.
Agreed.
And news, you know, how it's reported can set the stage, whether you're talking about print or media, whatever, can set the stage, okay? What you see, okay? I mean, if all you see, think about it. Whenever you see a person of color, it's always for something bad they've done. How often do you open the paper and see, ooh, she did accomplish this, and how? It's always, you know, it's got to be something negative. Well, do you think about the impact that has? If all you're seeing is a certain group of people, then Muslims, if you think all the Muslims are terrorists, and that's the only thing that they are characterized for, right? Mm-hmm. You don't ever see anything good about Muslims. I don't. I mean, very rarely have. I don't think I've ever seen anything good.
Yeah.
Okay? But, you know, they're the terrorists, and they do this, and the mass shootings. So what kind of mindset is that going to create? What kind of attitude is that going to create for you?
There is a huge racism problem in America right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not just between two races. It's between basically whites versus everyone. You said Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Being Jewish myself, mm-hmm. I can see anti-Semitism everywhere, even in our small town of Tallahassee.
Yeah.
And this mindset, it's just being adjusted and going on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Now, at my temple, we do work with the Islamic community and the Christian community to try to bring us together and promote how everyone should be treated equally, you know, and fair.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many people out there that don't want that. They like the stories. They want to have the violence be there and the racism so they can make a profit as well.
And on top of that, if you keep groups divided, that might just be where you want to keep them. You don't want them, you know, they may coalesce around something and go, wait a minute, this is something that's affecting all of us, okay?
Yeah.
If they start talking and communicating, you keep them separated.
Yeah, the division makes everyone less powerful, so mm-hmm. you can't make any real change, it seems mm-hmm. like.
But getting back to violence, you know, in preparation for today's program, I came to realize that there really is very little research on gun violence. And the research I found cited that there's very little research, you know, available. Why do you think that is the case? What is going on that, you know, here we are, we have mass shootings, we have all this stuff, and yet there's no research on it?
I think that there's no research because it's such a debatable issue and it's so controversial that no one feels like, because like both sides have so much to say, mm-hmm. that you can't really research much because it's kind of more ideas.
Yeah.
That may be. That indeed may be a component of it. Yeah.
Furthermore, with the gun violence, there's not that much information about it because selling guns and stuff, that makes a high profit. It is very mm-hmm. popular in our society. Mm-hmm. That's a mm-hmm. big part of our economy. Even if it's not out there, there still are gun trading rings going on. And even the NRA, selling all these guns, promoting it, mm-hmm. they don't really want you to know because they want to keep making money and they want to make sure that you have the right to shoot,
right.
to defend yourself, the right to hold your own gun. Mm-hmm. And the Second Amendment also goes into this.
Okay, that's true.
But there also have been things against that, which I'm in the middle, personally, because mm-hmm. it'd be nice to have a gun to defend yourself. But when you get angry and include violence and you get mad and you lose your head, you can start shooting.
Well, you talked about to defend yourself. How do you feel about stand your ground laws? I got a pause there.
If
are guns on campus, as far as that's concerned? I mean, while you're thinking, I mean, all of you are juniors, so you're getting ready to get, you know, to move on to apply to college. Would you apply to a college that allows guns on campus?
I definitely would not.
Well,
like, that's definitely a no.
I would not.
For me, honestly, I don't think I'd really. I feel like the news sometimes makes all these problems, like, it puts so much emphasis on them mm-hmm. that it seems like it happens all the time. And it happens way more than it should. But honestly, out of, like, thousands of students going to a campus, the chances of you actually getting injured mm-hmm. by, like, gun violence, I feel like it's still very small.
Okay. So it wouldn't influence you if they allowed guns on campus to the school that you may be applying for?
I would consider it, but if it was a good enough school, I would probably still go.
Okay. What about you, Amy?
I have to agree with him. I would be very skeptical about it, mm-hmm. but like you said, even though it is a little research, I would just have to research the school just to see, you know, like what type of violence they've had, like what type, if they've had any shootouts or stuff like that. I would have to research it. But I mean, shootings everywhere. You could just walk down the street somewhere and you could, you know, crazy enough, you could get shot.
That's true.
It's like, it really wouldn't make any difference. Okay. Well, it would, but, you know.
It's like you can't live your life in fear.
Right.
Because there's always going to be something
It could happen
there.
Anytime, anywhere.
Okay. Right.
And back to what I had asked originally, what about stand your ground? How do you feel about if I feel threatened? Okay. I feel afraid. You know, I can stand my ground. And, I can blow you away. I mean, in essence, that's what that's saying. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You know, I mean, I'm making it very simplistic, but that's what that's the way I read it. That's the way I understand it.
I feel like there's too many generalities. If you just have a law that makes it so people can be, like, on their property and then just shoot anybody, that's what it can seem like sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand if there's, like, a home invader, like, in your house, but there's differences. So mm-hmm. I feel like the laws shouldn't be so generalized. They should judge each situation more individually. I realize that for like to have a speedy trial, they need to have some things that would help the process go along. But I believe justice is more important than just mm-hmm. having like getting through it. If you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, interesting thing I found in doing the research on gun violence was that 63% of gun ownership reported is for self-protection, okay? And if it's for self-protection, let's take it to another level. What does that say? What does that say about the system if 63% of the people feel what I hear them saying is they feel unsafe.
Yeah, that they need a gun. Right.
You got it, Andrew. Exactly. That's what it is. So what does that say about the system?
It's not. They're not doing their job.
There's a lot of fear out there.
We're not trusting. In this day and era, we are not trusting other people.
Okay.
And we like to do things ourselves. And lately with the police, people are not using them. They'd rather take things in their own hand, even though the police is there to help us. They're mm-hmm. civil servants, but we're scared of them. People are scared of the police. And because of this, they will resort to using their own firearms and defending themselves in their own way without doing it legally, technically.
Right. So that says that obviously, like you said, something's broken.
Yes.
It's not working.
Right. The way I see it in the news, like so much publicity, like every time there's a shooting that involves the police. I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense that the police would be involved in these shootouts and stuff because they are who are supposed to come if there's a problem. And the way I see it, everyone's a person. A policeman, if there's someone like pointing a gun at you, you can get scared, I guess, if that sort of thing happened. And if someone's about to shoot you, then would you just let them shoot you?
Well, that's true. You raised some points. There's a widespread belief that much of the world is experiencing an epidemic of violence. In the U.S., most of the victims of violence are in their teens and 20s. Each day, 17 youth between the ages of 15 and 24 are victims of homicide. Homicide is the second leading cause of death for African-American males, 15 to 24, and African-American males from 25 to 44. Okay. I find that to be a very startling, statistic. Yeah. One that was just, kind of stopped you in your step. Every day, 17 youth are dying. That's heavy duty, okay? We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want us to look more at guns, and I want you to think about this. Guns are not the problem. It's the violent nature of American society. That's the cause of the problem with guns. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. This hour, I'm talking with students from Florida High, and we are examining the violence in America, talking about guns and self-protection. Guns are not the problem. It's the violent nature of American society that it's that cause that causes our gun problem. So I wanted you to respond to that, that guns are really not the problem. It's our violent nature in American society. If we didn't have this nature in society, I mean, somebody has to shoot the gun. The guns don't go off by themselves, okay? And that is the reality, whether you're pro or pro. I mean, it's the people that are doing it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Right.
Guns are just a tool.
Exactly.
And the reason why I think that there's always been this violent nature, it's that anyone these days can walk into Walmart and purchase a gun.
I know.
It's anyone.
How do we address that,
exactly,
though? I mean, what do we do? I mean,
There's many people in this world that need help, like medical problems, especially the ones that are messed up in the head. And they can go and purchase a gun, and if they are mad at something and they don't know how to deal with themselves, like what we addressed earlier, they'll just go shoot up something. And
How do we address that? I mean, because the one thing we always often talk about individuals who may have mental illness or who may be depressed, okay? But my question is, it doesn't last forever. I mean, if you're depressed, and let's say you're on medication, okay? That depression doesn't last forever. How do you determine? You're going to say, okay, well, Andrew, you can't have a gun for the rest of your life because you were depressed when you were 16 years old and you were on Zoloft. Okay, Right. I mean, how do we legislate that kind of thing? And then, wait a minute, I'll get right to you. But also, what about confidentiality? Now, when we get into that, who has the right to know about my health? I mean, those are just things I'm throwing out there for us to think about. Because it's certainly that, we're walking a tightrope. We have to be, it's real precarious there. We got to be careful because, you know, either way, you can violate an individual's civil rights.
Right.
It's a very tricky situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we need better gun control laws. And about the confidentiality of people, patients, if you are willing to go and buy a tool that can kill, deliberately to kill, because mm-hmm. that's what a gun's for, to kill.
You're right.
You should be able to give up your freedom because you're posing – you can pose a threat. Now, you can pose a threat without a gun.
Oh, yeah.
But if you – that's just a much faster way mm-hmm. that leads to many problems. And I say that you could easily let people just look at a few documents about you. Nothing too personal, just to wait how you think and how you pose – if you mm-hmm. do pose a problem, how
mm-hmm.
and how
mm-hmm.
you can be stopped
mm-hmm.
or why you shouldn't be able to do it.
The way I see it, as long as it's, like, there's an official, like, group of people who are meant to do that, who are meant to look at these documents, and it doesn't become, like, public record or anything, I just don't see why there would really be a problem for a little bit of regulation in that kind of way.
I mean, that may be. I mean, I just want to get your opinion.
Right.
Chelsea?
I agree with everything that Josh said, and I think that I also agree that if you go to purchase a gun, that it's like kind of a trade. Like you trade some of your
mm-hmm.
confidentiality
mm-hmm.
to purchase the gun.
Okay. So you're just saying, hey, that's part of it.
If you don't want to trade it, then you don't
need
get a gun.
Of course, we know how many guns are stolen. We haven't even gotten to that today. Did you have comments?
I absolutely agree with Chelsea. Like, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, it's you give and you take. It's like, if you want a gun, then you have to give something up. You can't just, you know, think you can just get such a violent weapon and not have to give up anything for it. Like, that wouldn't make any sense.
Well, it's easy to forget how many times mass shootings have occurred in America. They've been at least 52 in the last 30 years, and most of the killers got their guns legally, okay? More than half of the cases involve school or workplace. Mass shootings only represent a sliver of America's gun violence. 44 of the killers were white males. Only one was a woman. That's just something to think about. Now, it's impossible to discuss gun violence in 2016, like I said before, without mentioning Chicago. More than 4,000 shootings and nearly 800 homicides, which account for nearly half of the projected 14% increase. Now, they've had nearly half of that already. In Chicago alone, okay? What's happening? What's happening in Chicago? Is Chicago so different than these other cities? How do you read that?
I would read that as, like, that's very, like, very astonishing. That's very unacceptable. And I think the reason why these shootings are very high is because, like you said earlier, first off, they in Chicago, they have a lack of resources. Now, a lot of these young men, they have nothing to look forward to. They have, you know, a lot of times in their family, no one has reached many goals or many accomplishments. When they look around them, you know, other young men that look just like them, they're doing things. You know, they look to them, they see what they're doing, and I think that and they join these gangs because, like you said earlier, they are looking for a family. When you join the gang, that's like a group of people, a companionship. It might not be the same things you do with a family, but
it's a cohesive family.
Exactly,
because
that's all they really know. You know, when you join a gang, you're like, well, they must love me because they're showing me something that I've never had
and
before.
And you feel a part of it.
Right.
Any other comments?
I feel like if you're in a place that has that kind of like gang violence, if you're not part of a gang, then you don't have the same kind of protection that you would outside of the gang for you or your family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you give yourself to be part of the gang. So even if, say, you died, then you know that there was still someone looking out for the people you cared about.
Okay.
I agree with everything that's been said. And again, it's just the social norm in Chicago these days. Kids are growing up surrounded by it.
Right.
So that's what they resort to.
Do you think that we, as a country, a family, a community, whatever, culture, have become desensitized to death? I mean, are we kind of indifferent about it? I mean, it happens every day. Oh, that's just another one. you know, another one bites the dust, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yes. I think we have become desensitized because it's not affecting us personally. We see people on the news like, oh, that's so sad, and then we cut it off, and then we go back to our lives. But we don't know what that family went through. We're not seeing what they go through every day, so... Well, all you hear, this shooting in Chicago is it's kind of sad. But then if it's not affecting you personally, you kind of really don't, you know.
Do any of you know anyone or have any friends who have ever been shot?
I know a guy who got shot. I think he lived down in Miami. He was like 18 when it happened. But he survived. He's all right. We were worried about him for a while, but he
What was your response when you heard that kind of thing?
It was just crazy to me.
Surreal.
He went out at the wrong time, like at night in a bad area. He was angry about something. He didn't go home with his parents or something. He was walking down the side of the street and he just got gunned down for no reason. He stayed in the hospital for a while, but he got out.
He's okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else know anyone that's been affected by any type of violence?
Well, I have no family members that have been affected. And usually if it's something like that, if they got shot, it's usually not what they have done. It's usually by association, honestly. If they have a family member association, oh, well, like, you know, what is the saying? I guess you got caught by being association. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what happens. Either they were hanging out with someone or it was just in the wrong place at the wrong time type of thing.
Okay. America's been at war forever, it seems like.
Yeah.
What influence do you think this has? I mean, if we're a country that's at war, okay, what influence does this have on our violent tendencies? Or does it? It may not have any.
It does have an influence because if we're always in war, we need soldiers. And I'm going to talk about video games here.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. I'm just going to say, gender specifically, usually men or boys are targeted for video games. And most of these video games are shoot 'em, bang 'em up, kill 'em, gun violence,
yes,
video games. And this kind of prepares them if they ever have to fight, they feel like they're familiar with it. And it's easy for military groups like Marines or...
And some of them are very realistic.
Exactly.
I mean, people look like people.
It's almost
it's
like
not like a cartoon or anything. They're real.
And so this mentally trains them, and then it might promote them, something in them, to go join, go fight. Go fight for the United States. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to get everybody's reading on this.
I feel like if someone's going to be a soldier, then as hard as it is to kill someone, if it ever comes to that, they should know full well that they're killing another human being that has a life and has a family and has a reason for fighting as well. I think war itself is just a... It's a necessary evil, I'd say. It seems like it, but you never really know because sometimes it's just a choice between two bad things.
Chelsea,
yes, I also have to agree with war in our country. I feel like it also has to do with psychologically, making a lot of people feel as if they're so targeted. You know, like, oh, we're America, we're very strong, everyone's against us, everyone's, you know, targeting us, you know. And when people feel like they're targeted, they're going to want to go out, they're going to want to do something about it, they're going to want to put force, put violence, you're going to want to defend your country. And I think that's what has that huge effect on why we've been in war for so long over things that you probably would have said, well, maybe we could have just had this, or maybe we could have just did this, and maybe it could have been a whole nother situation.
Okay. Right.
What about, and I'm going to take a little different twist here, still looking at guns, but there is a term called coercive control. And this is the use of guns in non-fatal way, where, for example, looking at domestic violence, 4.5 million women have been bullied with guns by abusive partners. Now, I'm not saying they were shot, but they were bullied. They were, you know, the guns were kind of waved around and they were threatened. What do you think about that? How do we address something like this? Because what we're talking about here now is domestic violence. And let me just throw this out there. Look at domestic violence from a wider lens of, again, the socioeconomic components that play into domestic violence, okay? And I'm talking about unemployment, again, undereducated, lack of jobs, housing. You know, what role does this play? How significant are these variables?
So these people probably feel powerless, but when they have a gun, it suddenly makes them the boss. Because you listen to the person that has the gun out of fear. And in relationships, yeah, if you have the gun, you're going to be powerful, and you might want to use it to your advantage. Get what you want. So these people that are coming from the lower class, who have no education, who feel hopeless in this society where you have to learn how to code a robot or something, because jobs these days, having a gun makes you feel strong.
And that
people
gets back,
want to feel strong.
Well, that, Josh, that gets back to what we were saying at the very beginning of the conversation about power and control.
Go hand in hand.
And it goes hand in hand. And so you're seeing it in every aspect of society, okay? You know, whether it's in a relationship where one feels like they need to have power over the other, whether it's in a community where a certain group wants to control the comings and goings of that neighborhood. You know, you can look at it from so many different perspectives, but it does go back to what we were talking about as far as power and control is concerned, okay? Other comments, yeah.
Well, like I was saying earlier about someone knowing what they're doing when they hold a gun, the responsibility it comes with, not just the power and the control it can give you. If someone's going to have a gun, then they should act with the responsibility that becomes having something that could kill someone.
But that's not the case. I mean, there were, well, estimates go from 300,000 to 600,000 guns are stolen every year. So if they're stolen, that means these guns are going to end up in the hands of criminals, and eventually, often, they end up in crime scenes.
And I'm going to base off what Andrew says is how they should act with responsibility if they have guns. Not some, many of them don't know what that is. They don't know how to act responsibly because they've never seen it. They don't know anything about it. They just go with what they know, and if all they know is shoot them, just shoot them. Who cares? That's when we get problems.
Right.
And if you can get a gun that easily and you have that mindset.
You can.
Yeah, that's what leads to problems.
I'm sure any one of us, if we really wanted to find a gun, we could walk right out of here and find
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely,
yeah. You know? What about, in these last few minutes, what about a universal background check? Now, I know it depends on the state, okay? And depending on the setting and how you acquire this gun, there may not be any background check at all. I mean, I might have a gun, and Josh, you come to me and say, I'd like to buy your gun, and I sell it to you.
Right.
I know you. You're cool. Oh, Josh wanted a gun. I got an extra one. Why not me let him have it?
But then who's to say I won't sell it to someone else?
Right.
Yeah.
Or you don't leave it in your car. Somebody breaks in your car.
And they use it on you. Or they use it on someone else.
On somebody else. I mean, because that's how all this evolves. That's what, how it happens. So would universal background checks, and by that I mean a background check that is basically standard no matter what the state is, okay? It's standard in Montana as it's standard in New York as it is in Florida. I mean, is that the way to go? Or do we need to keep it at the state level? Because different environments have different dictates.
There should definitely be a universal check. Because let's say I buy a gun in Florida, and then I go, I don't know, to Texas or something. Or if I go to Texas and I could just buy a giant machine gun, and then I go to Florida with it secretly. I mean, there's no way to know if I just sell it off, and then that person uses it to go shoot up a school.
Of course, you know, now you don't even have to do it secretly.
Exactly.
You can get on the airplane,
just
check your gun, okay, get off,
and,
you know, put it together, mantle it, and blow folks away.
Exactly.
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Exactly.
What I find so strange is that guns like this, like that are obviously made for killing people, like not just hunting rifles and things like that, are even in circulation, and that's all right. I mean, people can say it's for self-defense, but if these things weren't even around, there wouldn't be a need for that.
Right, yeah.
I was recently reading a story about, it's called Get a Knife, Get a Dog, but Get Rid of Guns. There are several other ways to defend yourself. You can get a knife, and that'd promote physical fitness.
You
gotta run and chase them.
But
or
you
get
know,
a dog.
Think about it this way. There's also a psychology behind it. If you're going to kill somebody with a knife, that means I'm going to have to touch you.
Exactly.
And your blood is going to be squirting on me. Whereas if you're at a distance and I blow you away.
It's so much simpler. But
and cleaner.
And cleaner.
I mean, but, you know, that does have to do when you start looking at the different types of weapons that you use, you know. That's a part of it. I don't know if I want to deal with tonight, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
All in fun. We are out of time, okay? I would really like to extend my sincere appreciation to you all. I enjoyed talking with you and hearing your perspectives and look forward to having you come back. To my listening audience, that's it for this edition of 411 Team. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.